Okay, then let's start with next topic, with is goodwill and impairment. Floor is yours.
Okay. Good afternoon. The purpose of this session is to seek your advice on one specific part of the research project, disclosure for business combinations. The slide 4 in this paper provides a brief history of the research project. In July, the board decided to pursue 3 objectives for follow-up work for the research project set out on slide 6. The first, identifying better disclosures. Second, simplifying the accounting for goodwill. And last, improving the calculation of VIU. But today we are focusing on the first objective, identifying better disclosure for business combination. Although we are aware that as preparers, you might be very keen to discuss second objective, simplifying accounting for goodwill, but we might have a chance to discuss it later, at a later date. And slide 27, which is the last slide in this paper, defines some of the next step for the project. I would like to emphasize that the ideas we are discussing today have yet to be presented to the board. So your feedback will be definitely included in this step analysis to be presented to the board at a later date. And as you see slides, we have 2 disclosure issues to discuss today. First, targeted improvement to the existing disclosure of IFRS 3, providing information about business combination in the year of acquisition. And secondly, additional disclosures about the subsequent performance of the business combination. So to have the discussion, I will tee up the first issue and open up the discussion for your comment, and then I will move on to the second issue. So turning to the first issue, improving disclosure at acquisition date, slide 7 provides a summary of the feedback from users about disclosure for business combination. The project was set a research objective to explore improving disclosures to enable investors to assess more effectively whether a business combination is a good investment decision and whether that business combination is performing as expected after the acquisition. Therefore, in response to the feedback we received, the step at considering whether the disclosure objective could be developed, as set out on slide 9 to 10. The first part of the research objective for disclosure, to provide information to help investors assess whether a business combination is a good investment decision, should largely be met by existing disclosures of IFRS 3, but with some targeted improvement to those disclosure requirements following the feedback received. From slide 12 to 16, we set out some targeted amendments to the existing disclosure of IFRS 3 currently being considered. So more specifically, looking at slide 13, we are considering requiring an entity to disclose quantitative information on factors making up the goodwill, such as a quantitative assessment of the expected synergy of the acquisition. This is because users want to understand the rationale for the business combination and also to assess themselves the reasonableness of the amount paid for the acquisition. And slide 8, slide 15 said that another existing disclosure requirement in IFRS 3 needs to be improved, which are the amount of revenue and profit or loss of the acquired business. We understand that users particularly need the pro forma information on earnings for the period prior to acquisition because of comparability reasons. Additionally, slide 16 provides 2 examples of existing IFRS 3 disclosure that the staff think may be unnecessary and could be deleted to reduce cost on preparers. So our question to GPF members about those targeted improvements are set out on slide 17. We are asking you specific questions about these targeted improvements mentioned on slide 13 to 15, as well as an overall question about cost and barriers to providing this information. So let me open up the discussion. So we welcome any comment or view about this.
Okay, thanks for the introduction. Ibaki?
So, yeah, it depends on the situation, especially, you know, if the acquired company get integrated in acquiring company,
yep.
Then it's difficult to follow the, you know, those, you know, performance, original objective and the goals,
yep.
As you can see. If you are doing a, you know, private equity and simply keep it as it, as it is, then yep. It's easy to track all those, you know, performance, you know, objective. So it's totally different depending on the situation, the acquired nature. That's my view.
So it's about the integration.
Yeah, integration situation. Is a key factor, so yeah.
For clarity, I would like to make sure that we are focusing on the information about performance of the business combination, not specifically the acquired business, because usually noted that where integration occurs, the information about how entity monitors the combined business is still useful. So I think as long as the entity monitor the combined business, if user want that information, the integration might not be barrier to provide that combined.
Well, if we track the revenue or top line, that could be possible, but the cost wise, you know, it's very hard to track the cost of the acquired business, yeah. You know, part. That's my feeling.
Okay.
Top line could be fine. Yeah, we can follow the product of sales and revenue size. So we can easily do that.
Do you think, depending on the size of the acquisition, your how to monitor the acquisition is different?
It's regardless of size. That's my feeling. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
It all depends on the industry by industry.
Yeah. Ian?
I think you've correctly identified two key things people want to know.
Yeah.
What exactly did you pay all that money for? And then how did the business perform? So I think that's great. And this is an area where disclosure could certainly be improved. And I know the usual terminology improved is expanded. As a side remark, I would hope the disclosure in IAS 36 for the goodwill impairment test could be correspondingly reduced. But I'll leave you to think on that one. But having correctly identified the two things that people really want to know, we then once again get sidetracked into a discussion about the goodwill, which is not what people want to know. Mm-hmm. Goodwill is not not an asset. I've looked to see our own financials. We did 18 acquisitions in the last 5 years, and we justified synergies as being a reason for the goodwill in 18 of those. And acquired workforce were also in 18 of those, despite that in quite a few of them we made some significant restructurings afterwards. And control premium was another one, 18 times. So calling it boilerplate is actually an insult to boilers. I think we need to. I'll tell you two explanations we didn't use. Goodwill represents the fact that we paid too much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We didn't use that one, mm-hmm. because, of course, that never happened to us. We never did that. And I never saw anybody else use it, so it obviously never happened anywhere else either. But that one's never there. The one I think I might put in this year, goodwill represents a residual surplus arising from the acquisition accounting that has no commercial value or relevance. Because that's actually what it represents. And then if you try and somehow say what you're saying on slide 13, what do these synergies represent? They don't represent anything, because what happens is our M&A team, they're looking at a deal, they think, okay, we might pay $100 a share.
Yep.
And then they come to me and they say, well, how does that look on the financial reporting? And I sort of pull off the 10Q or 10K or whatever, and I do a little stuff, and I go, okay, that's what it looked like. And they say, oh, what will happen if we pay $110 a share instead of $100 a share? And I say, the goodwill is going to go up.
Mm.
And they say, how much? And I say, well, take the number of shares you're going to buy, multiply it by 10, and that's how much. But no one on the M&A team is thinking, okay, we're going to buy some extra synergies, or we're going to get some brand value or anything that goodwill is supposedly representing. I think once we start getting into the discussion about what goodwill is, you're running off in the wrong direction. Goodwill is residual. Okay, we can discuss whether it makes sense or not, but that's all it is. So to determine whether your business combination makes any sense or not, whether it's delivering value, you're wasting your time talking about the goodwill. You should be sort of focusing on the other things you're talking about, which actually I think are quite good. The synergies, however, this is very difficult, because you're asking to compare your actual results with something that would have happened if you'd have done something else.
Yeah.
You can maybe do that in the first year, but then depending what it is, it increasingly diverges. I mean, we did an acquisition 20 years ago in Japan, a company called Chugai. It's still a listed company. It still has its own share price. I can prove to you exactly how well they've done. Other acquisitions we've done only 3 years ago, the IP's there and everything else has gone. So it's really quite situational. And the point is, actually, we don't monitor this ourselves. An A team do a deal, the deal is done, they move on to the next deal, and they hand over what's been acquired to the business. And as far as our business are concerned, how much was paid for it is a sunk cost. They don't care about that. They've got this new thing to operationalize, and we spend all our energy into integrating, getting the best value out of the thing we've just acquired, and trying to work out ad hoc, whether what we paid was good enough, and whether we delivered on what was in the original acquisition place. Right. Actually, you then have to stop people getting on with running the new business, yeah, which might be a challenge in itself, and to start doing all this other stuff. So actually, we actually don't have that. So I think, in conclusion, I think the goodwill, you need to forget about the goodwill,
yep,
and rather think what actually are the disclosures that actually people would like to have. And I think you need to give a certain amount of flexibility to prepare us to actually deliver that.
Thanks, Ian. Lilian?
Yes, thank you. I agree with Jan relating to what he said about the goodwill. I will further say that some things, mostly the slide 15, the amount of revenue and profit or loss of the acquisition, the acquired entity from the beginning, even in the year of the acquisition, is very difficult to do. It does depend on the calendar that you have and what are the integration that you are planning to do. I'm talking about experience. We did a very big acquisition in 2016. It was made in May. And in September, we integrated it inversely. That means that the new enterprise integrated the old business, our old business. Mm. So talking about the sales or revenues or results of the acquired entity has no meaning, because it was what we planned to do from the very beginning of the acquisition. So disclosure will depend on what would be your strategy relating to the acquisition. You need to put the disclosure of what will be the result of the acquisition in line with the strategy of the acquisition. Mm-hmm. If your strategy is to integrate rapidly the new business with the existing business, you cannot demand or you cannot ask the company to provide the profit and loss of the acquiree.
Okay, thanks. Stephen?
I think the same point on synergies.
Yep.
But maybe even more so that actually you can't really quantify often what the synergies are in the first place. You may have some ideas, but the reality is that whenever you acquire a business, there's always surprises. There are things that aren't quite as you thought they were. Mm. And some of those may be negative and some of those may be opportunities. Yeah. And trying to lay those out when you've acquired the business and then map against those when they're moving in the first place is just impossible, even if you had quantified them in the first place.
Can I ask one?
You can? Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, we also heard during our informal outreach, because entity value divisions as a whole, it's quite difficult to quantify the synergies. But I think when you're bidding the price, that bid price might be included in the expected synergy you think. So, and then also, as I might misunderstand, but when you are doing price purchase allocation, and then when it has been complete, and you are finally having the goodwill balance, so management should be able to justify the goodwill balance with some expected synergy or technical goodwill or premium for control. It's very similar to doing an impairment test at the acquisition date. So in that sense, I'm not sure whether an entity does not have quantitative information on expected synergy or something like that.
So I guess a couple of observations on on what you just said. Firstly, when you are making an acquisition, you're not only relying on a projected cash flow. You have to then do some activity around projected cash flow in order to calculate the value of your technology and your customer list and so on. But that is not necessarily, it's one indicator, but it's only one indicator. Now, your synergies are likely to be within a range. You're not going to have them pinned down and say, okay, the price of this is £1.12 because that's what my synergies add up to. But it might be, well, it could be between £1 and £1.50.
Yeah, we understand. Yeah, there could be a range of the amount.
And it depends, you know, and there's different risks attached to each, you know. Do you go down a weighted average on the risk? You know, you get into all sorts of messes, even if you actually had sufficient facts to pin those on, and you don't. I recognise the problem with doing an impairment test on day one.
Yep.
I don't believe that's possible under IAS 36 to actually do that in a practical way. Of course, we may be required to, but you generally then just support the value based on the value you just paid. So you don't do that. Shall I move on to my second point, or do you want to come back on that before?
I had a follow-up question, but if you want to move on to your second point, then it's sort of a question for the three people that have spoken so far.
Okay. In terms of profit or loss measure, I know you said that we would do this, and we won't disappoint. For me, it really very much depends on whether you're talking about taking additional disclosure and getting rid of the acquisition accounting that is currently within IFRS 3 or not. And let me explain them. The profit and loss account is significantly polluted by IFRS 3 acquisition accounting. So all of the fair value adjustments that you apply when you acquire a business, they have to unwind over time. All of the amortization and related adjustments, they unwind. So they impact on profit. And it's quite difficult to manage those two elements side by side, even if you're ignoring things like accounting policy changes. So I understand when users say, well, you know, you've got a business that's running beforehand and you've got some numbers there and you've got a business afterwards. Surely you must be able to, if you know about it in advance, you can set your systems up to track that. But you're not necessarily comparing like with like. Mm-hmm. And acquisition accounting completely draws a line through it anyway. You know, inventory uplift and winding that. You could say that in theory, if you've got a business that has got sufficient inventory see you to the end of the accounting year, that actually you expect the profit for that year to be zero because you've already valued it in your inventory. And actually it may be negative because you've got to unwind your technology and your customer list and so on at the same time.
Yeah.
How does that help? So I would see the issues as being very much related. But coming back to the profit or loss point, if you were trying to compare before and after, then there probably would be a bridge that you could produce as long as the rules are pragmatic and allow sufficient room for us to operate within the business realities of how integration occurs and so on, how those results are reported. But it would be costly.
Yeah.
And I can't see how we could justify really putting the amount of additional cost into that unless we're going to save the cost on doing the valuation of the intangibles.
Nearly, do you have it?
Yeah, I wanted to follow up. Ian, you had raised the question or the issue, and Stephen as well, about the difficulty with synergies and goodwill as a residual. And Liliana, you talked about how you need to consider the strategy. And what I'm wondering is, how do you determine whether your acquisition is successful then? So how do you know that you've succeeded? So if the focus is what I've paid is a sunk cost and now I'm just focusing on integration, how do you know that you're doing well by your integration?
I don't think we score it that way. I think the point is life, that once you've done the deal, life in is what it is. You set new targets for your combined business, including everything, and then you move ahead.
Yeah.
And you don't go back. I mean, when the M&A team are building an acquisition case, typically there's some kind of sort of like waterfall chart that somehow gets to the current stock share price, mm-hmm. and then you think, okay, how much extra will we pay, and what will we think about that? But if, for example, whether it's if there's an intangible there, you know, we're using our own internal WACC. We're not using a market participant WACC. We're not interested in what somebody else might pay for it. We're interested in what we would pay for it, knowing what we know and what we can do with it. And that's not what IFRS 3 then tells us to do in terms of the acquisition accounting. So actually, the acquisition accounting under IFRS 3 is entirely separate. You're looking at the same things, but you're then looking at them in a completely different way to compare with how you actually did the deal. And what drops from, you know, I can tell you from the waterfall charts we see, we don't have this huge wadge of goodwill that sort of nobody knows what it is when we buy something. Okay. You know, there is a rationale for that, and some of it is a sort of calculated risk by management when they decide to pay a certain price or not, and you see whether it pays out. But, you know, there's no retrospective scorecard. I think our M&A team periodically have a look and see, okay, we did well with that one and not with that one. In our sector, it's usually pretty obvious. It's either great or it's rubbish. Mm-hmm. you don't need to do that. And therefore, we don't bother sort of micro-analysing that.
I think for us, it would be the same. I suppose to put it in a different context. So when we make an acquisition, then the share price will react. And it will react at that point. So when we talk about disclosures about an acquisition that's taken place, the share price doesn't typically get impacted by that. It's whatever press announcement you put out on the day. And thereafter, what the users appear to be interested in is actually, well, okay, what about organic growth and so on? It's not looking at that acquisition as a bespoke entity and was it successful or not. Mm-hmm. And I think our way of looking at it from a management's point of view is along the same lines. We don't seek to try and get local management of the acquired business to justify the amount that we paid for it. We get them to deliver to the forecast that they've signed up to.
Okay.
Neely, to give you one simple example, if we do an acquisition and I get my budget for my area afterwards, I get a budget that considers multiple things, savings from integrating the accounting team of the target, growth that the company may face, regardless of whether it's growth coming through the acquisition or growth coming otherwise, a savings target that I may get for simply being more efficient. Mm-hmm. All this is finally put, and finally my CFO, together with controlling, does some magic, and they come up with a number and say, Christoph, this is your budget.
Okay.
I don't get it in a way of, and you're budgeted, because of the acquisition, we take this down, because of this, we take this up, we take this down, because a lot of judgment goes in.
Yeah. Mm.
So that's why the acquisition is only an input factor in my next budget, and nothing that is spelled out specifically and then tracked separately from everything else.
Okay.
And that's actually the same, be it for the revenue target that people get, particularly if it is a matter of integration. In our case, it's often we take the software, make it part of a bigger product, and the bigger product is so that we couldn't track anyway, is that a customer who bought it because this additional functionality is in there now, or would the customer have bought it anyway? That's why on the revenue side, to now track how much is coming actually from this functionality that I bought through the acquisition and embedded in my product is not possible. And the same happens on the cost side because it's not a standalone thing. Yeah. And there is not much reasoning into doing this tracking because there is no return right. Mm-hmm. I cannot go and say, oh, it was a mistake. I give it back. Yeah? Hey, actual shareholders of the target, I would like to get my money back. Mm-hmm. We don't have that. So why would it make sense to somehow try to, if the world had been as I had expected when I did the acquisition, would it have been come out? No, it's so many other things that change every day that come into play, and there is no value in the effort of now saying, let's slice it, dice it, and take it as if it was a standalone event.
It is also...
there's not any value in tracking.
So I think I hear what Stephen says, both on polluting from the IFRS 3, which I'm sympathetic about, but also, and also the market reacts day one to news of an acquisition. But I'm sitting there thinking about looking at an entity, do I want to invest in it today? And actually, I'll go back and look at its acquisition track record, because capital allocation seems to be a key responsibility of management. Mm-hmm. And I want to understand whether they've been judicious with the capital that I'm managing on behalf of my clients. And it's that acquisition record that will be a key driver for me. So in terms of having good information on day one around the economics of the deal, and I'm not particularly interested in the goodwill, it's the total consideration and the likely return on that consideration over the medium term. So I'm not looking for a quick return, but also a sense of, is that subsequently dealing? And that's why it's so important to investors. It's not just saying, actually, because I accept the market does give a message on day one, but I'm looking from one company to another, trying to think about who are good allocators of capital and who aren't such good allocators of capital.
But why is that not achieved by just looking at the results profile of that group? Because the way that I observe it is, if the results are growing in line with expectations, then effectively that means that acquisitions... Now, of course, there's a risk that actually the organic business has done super well and covered up the sins. And if it's gone badly, management have gone anyway.
Yeah.
So therefore, who you hold into account?
Yeah, I guess I'm not so much interested in the expectations game, which seems to be quite a short-term game anyway. It's really thinking much longer term than that. It's about looking about, if you look at where capital deployed in recent years, probably about half of it's gone to M&A. You know, so it's a very significant call on shareholders' kind of investment. So I think that's the focus. And I accept when you do the analysis, you can see actually there's some questionable deals, there's some very good deals, and then there's a big grey area in between. That is the reality. One has to accept that, the reality. And I guess I'm trying to position myself, you know, at the good end and away from the bad.
But what concretely would you like to see?
For me, on day one, I'd like to. I think it's already a requirement to provide revenue in totality for the year of the acquisition. I like a profit number that I could relate to. So net profit tells me nothing, because that's after all the financing and the restructuring. It's actually after the IFRS 3 adjustments. So I almost want a pre-IFRS 3 number, and some companies do provide that already today on the acquisition. A sense of the synergies. So I'd like to give some credit to that in terms of me doing my medium-term calculation. And a clear, some clarity, and we don't always have this, about the total consideration. So still, and our standards allow this, that you can potentially, you don't have to fully declare the debt that's been acquired in acquisition. The standards allow you, the standards talk about major categories of assets and liabilities. So having clarity around that, for instance, I can just work out the economics of the transaction. I think that's all I'm really asking for day one.
If only we knew, we would give you that.
Well, you know what you've paid. You know what you've paid.
That's fair enough.
Yeah.
But we can talk to all of those, and I think most press announcements do. But I guess his question is, what comes next?
But they're two separate questions.
Yeah. So I think on that point...
There's day one, which I think is where we started, and then there's the subsequent performance, which I think we probably accept is more challenging.
Mm-hmm. And I would not see it in Korea. Because it is kind of, I see in acquisitions where people have clearly, they have fairness opinions, they have clearly announced, okay, who's the rationale of the deal, they have announced cost synergies, revenue synergies, they have announced, okay, that they want to get maybe the number two market leader in this region, whatever. I think for big acquisition, you're seeing this kind of, and if people saying me that they don't track anything of that, if they're achieving that, I can't really believe that. It's difficult. I totally understand it's difficult.
But Martin, I think there you're a little bit
in the way you're imagining it.
There you're a little bit to the point, right? I think maybe also we're getting a little bit carried away here in this discussion, because again, materiality I think is a key factor in there. I would guess actually that 70%. I don't know. I mean, on your 18 acquisitions, but how many of them are really material that they stand out to be reported separately? Because I think, you know, when I look at least from when we invest and do acquisitions, probably if we are in the range of 20 acquisitions, probably 16, 17 are not really standing out to be really material to be reported in all these aspects, and hence you can't follow up on all these details which you are specifying.
Materiality. I would like to
share with you my experience in a very big one acquisition. It was more than 25% of the former group. For this acquisition, we raise capital, we raise debt, we provide everything to the market, and this kind of issues there was not on the table. What is was in the table was what is the rationale behind the acquisition, why we did that from the industrial point of view. I put an example. This acquisition was made because we have the production facilities, and the query was the distribution. We tried to develop our distribution in the state. It was in the United States. It was very costly. It was done by several years. The acquisition put us under 900 point of sales immediately. And there was not so much alternative for acquisition. There is one company to acquire. So this was communicated clearly to the market, showing them that we have the facilities, they have the distribution channels and the distribution software and the distribution, I will say, know-how. And that's why our former distribution net was transferred to them. Mm-hmm. It was immediately done because it was clear in our mind what was the strategy. We didn't talk about what was the sales separately of Airgas. No, no. It doesn't matter.
But it must matter because it must determine what price you pay. There must be a tolerance in terms of what price you would pay.
Mm.
There must be at some point.
Okay. That we should.
I will ask you, what will be the good price to pay when you have not too much alternative?
But your
what is the fair price?
But your alternative could have been to not continue to invest
in the
US.
We did it for 20 years, and we didn't reach the size of the query. What will be? What is the math that justifies that? If not a strategy for the future.
Right, but
instead of investing for 20 more years in order to have all this distribution net, and with all the problems of having the concurrent, the other company, the acquired company was our concurrent, we acquired that.
Priceless.
No, I didn't say priceless.
Yes, I think my view is that we should look beyond an accountant's view. I think accountant's view of an acquisition is totally different than a businessman thinks. We are trying to reconcile between these two and see what disclosure we can make. I think we are trying to fix a problem by adding some additional disclosure, whether it would help. If I understand correctly, the objective is currently the impairment reviews are not so well developed and well done. And that is the reason we find suddenly companies going bust, and then that is getting reported, and then we all get excited that something wrong with impairment standard or something wrong with acquisition accounting. I think it is more to do with the impairment reviews not adhered to as per the standard. That is the reason we are finding that example. Coming back to IFRS 3 requirement, whether we can provide quantitative information, yes, this can be provided, but at what cost? What are the practical difficulties? For in a competitive industry, there may be multiple companies bidding for the same acquisition, and the management may not be interested to share all the strategic details as to what are the synergies they are going to get on piece of paper, especially with a wider audience. That may be one of the resistance I can think of putting a projection as to how much revenue I'm going to achieve, how much profit I'm going to achieve out of this acquisition, and then how it is going to be beneficial or how it is going to be misused also we need to consider. The moment that you see next year you have not performed again as well as what you estimated, then people think that it's a failure, but it may not be. The acquisition may be a long-term strategic acquisition. You may have to give some time for it to reap the benefits. That is one of the example you have provided in your case study. In year two, you don't achieve, but in year three, you beat the expectation. So that way, I think on day one, providing quantitative information, there will be a lot of resistance by management because that would be more sensitive or commercially sensitive or strategically sensitive information to share, especially if the company is working in a competitive environment.
So about, I would like to talk about the cost and that commercial sensitiveness. So about in terms of the additional significant cost, I think you might have some due diligence work for considering the acquisition. So during that work, you might have that information about quantitative synergy or something like that. And then also, when you report to the director or board of directors about acquisition, at that time, you also need to that kind of information. So we think such information is readily available, so it might not add some significant cost. It's about whether to provide this information in audited financial statement or in other documents.
Can you clarify what information you're talking about? Yeah. I didn't understand that.
It's too confidential, I guess.
The commercial sensitivity is, it doesn't matter, not adding the cost.
No, but sorry, what information do you think we're giving to the board that we should be giving outside?
Such as the quantitative synergy or?
No, we don't track synergies like you're saying. Seriously, we don't.
Day one information.
Day one
usually day one.
We don't know day one synergies.
A retrospective reviewer.
Yeah, but I think Wong, he was saying at the beginning, you were saying you had a waterfall.
Yes.
Or a step diagram. I think what you're talking about is understanding and what those parts of the steps are. So effectively. Yeah.
Question is not whether you have the information or not. The question is how much do you want to
click on
the link? There are other difficult. Okay.
Yes, very good. This touch, I'll give you an example. One we did, and we paid $10 billion for it, so it's small. This drug has a competitor, and we don't want to disclose how quickly we think we can bring this drug to market, and we don't want to disclose what we think the peak sales are going to be, because the company we bought is a US-only company, and we're a global organization, so theoretically we've got a little bit of expertise rolling this stuff out. But we don't want to... You know, we would not be particularly comfortable about sharing that information. Now, it's not that it's sort of we don't want, you know, sort of don't think the investors need to know it. I think the investors, and to be clear, the company we're buying had their own, it's a US company, they had their own 10Ks and 10Qs. The analysts and investors can perfectly well look at that company themselves and make their own projections, and they indeed did. And then, as it turned out, we did book an impairment, which caused absolutely zero impact on the share price because they already knew it from looking at it. But in that particular deal, we didn't have synergies. I mean, we were acquiring a US-listed company, so obviously we wouldn't have needed their group communications or their investor relations. You know, so we had a sort of certain integration plan to do that. But then what further value that comes out in terms of synergy tracking?
But in that case, how did you know to book an impairment? Because if you had nothing that you were tracking it against, how did you ever know?
Oh, the impairment comes from the fantasy of the IFRS 3 bookings, because we booked an we booked an intangible asset based on a market participant discount rate, not our own one, based on what a market participant would pay, not what we would pay. And then we played it forward. And as it turned out, the sales expectations weren't in line with what we or anyone else expected. And therefore, we you know, it was clear that there was an impairment on the intangible asset. Oh, the goodwill is still sitting somewhere as a CGU at a higher level. That's a different story.
So you can summarise it by saying you paid lots of money for a company where the sales didn't reach the levels you expected.
Yes, but everybody knows that. Our business is a high-risk, high-reward business. We, at the same time, we bought 60% of another company for $50 a share. Earlier this year, we bought out the other 40% for $137 a share. But we didn't rate up the goodwill from the original $50 a share that we bought. And in fact, the 40% we did buy, that's going whizzing into equity. It's not even an acquisition as far as IFRS is concerned. So people know this stuff. I think it's very industry specific. And I think journalists and media may be a different story, but analysts are not naive about this. They get a pretty good view on sort of what management strategy is and how competent they are. And they understand the dynamics in their particular sector about what's going on. And they can judge this stuff. And booking impairments and stuff isn't going to change their mind. They already know it, and they've already formed their judgment.
Okay. So next is Sandra.
Just echoing the same things that other people commented on. If your goal is integration, the quicker you break down those walls, the better the organization is going to be. So your goal is to get in, no longer allow separate reporting, get it integrated, you know, mixed management in there so that they feel like they're part of the overall organization as quick as possible. So we just don't have a means, purposely don't have a means for tracking specific businesses that we intended to integrate. Now, if you were acquiring a business that you intended to have stand alone, that's another thing. Mm-hmm. But I think in a lot of the people here, the intent is that they're going to integrate their operations.
Yeah.
But even when you integrate, you get a change because
you may or may not. So we're in the oil and gas industry. We may get, you know, 10,000 acres of unproved property in this area, and you might not have revenue there for another 10 or 15 years. You know, you may intend to develop that far out. You can have another area that you bought that has producing properties, and you'll have revenue there. But it's all getting split up into all the various areas that you manage separately. And your goal is to, you know, break down all those barriers.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Parintra?
Yeah, I mean, I would add to the points already made. I mean, Ian, we have had in the last 5 years as many acquisitions in our company. And let me bring out certain basic understanding. One is that at the time of acquisition, what we disclose is very important because we draw multiple scenarios and worst case, best case, a whole lot of exercises are done. Question is that what am I going to disclose to the investors? If I disclose my worst situation, how will it be taken in the marketplace? So therefore, just as in the impairment testing, there is an element of Excel sheet exercise. This may turn out to be another Excel sheet exercise because I'll be playing safe. Later on, if at all I'm capable of disclosing the numbers, I should not be accused of not reaching those numbers. So that one Excel sheet exercise is to another Excel sheet exercise. The second point is, let's understand the gathering of data, capturing of data, and review by management is not prompted by what is written in the accounting standard. It is prompted by the management decision and what management and the company structure requires. So therefore, in all the cases, in all cases, post-acquisition, new parameters are set, and the new parameters are not exclusive to the unit acquired only, because right from the leader who is heading that acquired business, down to all levels, everything changes. And the success of acquisition lies in how quickly I can bring in those changes. So therefore, I mean, the whole lot of things are changing, and accordingly, the parameter also is changing. By what criteria their success will be reviewed by the management is changing. And those criteria are very, very, very different from the initial calculation on the basis of which I acquired the unit. So that's one understanding. So therefore, if I have to report those numbers, what is stated here, I have to develop a separate parallel system of data capturing for the purpose of disclosure to my investors. And I can assure you, in all our cases we have seen, management is not interested in any of those numbers. So I'm forced to capture and disclose a set of numbers where my management also is not interested. Now, another point I would like to share with you, that there are two types of situations. In one situation, we decide that I let the unit operate as a subsidiary. Okay? Now, thanks to the the transfer pricing and all other legislation, the revenue and the profit and other numbers in the case of a subsidiary are representative. But in all other cases where it is not kept as a subsidiary, in all other cases it loses its identity. And only in the case of subsidiary, yes, what you are wanting us to do, it is possible if I decide to keep it as a subsidiary. But would you have one set of rules if I keep it as a subsidiary, another set of rules if I merge it into my business? It sounds impractical. So whatever it is, you have to lay down only one accounting principle. So therefore, on day one, there is problem in my disclosing. Apart from the strategic problem, I'm saying that the set of numbers, what I'm going to disclose, I have a huge doubt as to the veracity of that that number. And going forward, comparing those numbers is another set of huge problem. I am not understanding how is it possible by any industry.
I've been thinking maybe about asking for a disclosure of the performance of the cash generating unit where it is integrated, because that would then, I think, give some indication if the performance of the integrated business is well or not well, and therefore give some indication if the acquisition is successful. Mm-hmm. Because what I'm hearing from users is maybe if I track this on a segment level, it's too high level, so I don't know. Mm-hmm. And but cash generating unit level maybe is a level, the right level, where you can track the performance of the integrated acquisition of the business. Is maybe that the way forward? Because I think, difficult for us to say, man, clearly, I think there is an interest. If you pay 10 billion whatever kind of money from shareholders, okay, is that well invested or was it a bad investment? I think there is a need to have a good understanding of that. And I think also, man, we're hearing a lot of people say, okay, the track record of companies to make successful acquisition is not very, very good. So we see a lot of examples where acquisitions was not successful. And maybe that is also kind of what I'm hearing, maybe a reason, because management has not any opportunity to track if the acquisition was successful, and maybe they're doing the failure again and again, because they don't have information about that.
I'd like to respond to that.
It was a joke, but I think... Yeah.
No, I'd like to respond to that.
I really think, man, is the level of where we maybe... Because I think we need a way forward, because man, there is, I think, a need for investors to get information about, okay, is it successful, yes or no. We currently have said information about goodwill impairment tests, which people say is not any value. All the preparers saying it's not any value. So what should we do? We cannot say, don't have any idea. And maybe it's an idea to track it on a different level.
Now, may I respond? See, on the day I'm acquiring a business, I have some strategic intent for acquiring that business. And I'm drawing my experience from what we share in the conference call every quarter. Every quarter, it's a standard question from the users that how is your acquisition going?
Exactly, yeah.
We first say this was our strategic intent, and this is where we stand. Mm-hmm. So, and then, I mean, it is at a broad level of fulfillment or non-fulfillment of strategy. Are you hitting the what kind of profit are you? What kind of profit you are hitting? No concrete number, but broadly speaking, how is the acquisition doing? Is what is shared already being shared with the users?
I love it, Gary.
Okay, Martin, you actually said a lot of what I was going to say, but let me build on it. Just to position myself, if you follow our public meetings, it is no secret I do not like our impairment test. And it's also no secret I prefer amortization coming back. It's also probably no secret that's not going to happen. but to be determined by due cost. Process, it, projection. But anyway, well, seriously, I think I do favor a disclosure approach, which is kind of what we've been talking about here. I mean, my way of thinking is... We're only talking the material acquisitions. I did about 80 in my life, of which two were big enough to need shareholder approval. So I would be thinking two, not 80, you know, in this thing. And we're not talking forever. We're talking, I think most of our discussion, talking about 2 years out or something post-acquisition. We're not talking forever. But Martin's right. There's got to be a path forward. The current process isn't working. So then if it's not working, what do you do? If you went to took the FASB approach, indicators only, that's fine until the indicators don't work. And then you're kind of back to some detailed work. Even if amortization got reintroduced, remember, even the old days, it was amortization subject to an impairment test. And it takes a lot of years before the goodwill amortizes down, before you're clearly out of the woods on impairment. So you're kind of stuck. What do you do, you know, going forward? If it doesn't work today and you spend a lot of money and your shareholders want to know, well, did I get value for it? So I sit back and think, you know, if I look at things, you know, a lot of acquisitions have contingent payouts, either extra shares to the former owners or to management on performance. Well, if when you have acquisitions like that, you are, in fact, tracking it in some way, how it's doing, but maybe not the level of recognition and measurement that we would necessarily think, but it's being tracked. And likewise, if it's separately entity, you might very well have a tax return, granted operations do get moved out. And I think, and like I say, I don't like the impairment test because I think the CGU concept has got its own problems. And again, no secret there. But you do use the same sort of information for the CGU test today that you'd be talking about disclosing. I think what we could be looking at and test, you know, for this room now or subsequently or another meeting or whatever, because this is not about to be resolved in, you know, the next month or two, is if you went to a pragmatic principles-based approach for communicating how is an acquisition doing. I mean, you can think about six ways you could do it. Could be just absolute numbers, you know, if you left it sort of standalone. It could be incremental contribution. It could be how you're doing against acquisition pricing assumptions. If it's its own segment or most of its segment, maybe IFRS 8 is just sufficient. What does the CEO look like? That's kind of the management approach. You know, if it's material and big enough in a shareholder vote, it's not going to be ignored. But I think, I mean, I sort of can buy into any or all of those or even a list of them, pick one. But honestly, I think it's going to be hard to not have extra disclosures as not part of wherever this goes forward because the status quo isn't working. So what's the alternative?
Can I just build on that? Because there was something in what Birendra said, which I think struck a chord with me in a way, which is made me think it's not so far from what we're trying to achieve, but there are a couple of extra details in what we're trying to do. So you said on the conference call, they'll always ask you the question, how's the acquisition doing? And you'll have an answer for that. And it seems to me that the extra ingredient we proposed was you define up front at the time of the acquisition, or at least in the first period, how you will answer that question. So that might be something we ought to explore is that feasible or does that need to be made more flexible? And then the other ingredient, of course, is what you were talking about was responding on the conference call. And what we're talking about is building something into the financial statements, which implies you need to know far enough in advance to sort of plan to collect what you're going to put in. The other thing that struck me in the discussion was something that both Ian and Stephen said in different ways, which is things happen. You know whether it's been a success or not. Surprises happen. You have good surprises. You have bad surprises. And maybe the answer is not totally to try and pin down in advance how you're trying to measure whether it's a success, but try and focus on identifying the surprises and making sure there's some disclosure about the surprises when they occur.
Okay. Thanks, Peter. Marilla?
I understand the need for additional disclosures concerning these specific fields, but I'm not in favor of the proposals that we have here. I think they are really complex to apply. I agree with everything that has been said here before by my colleagues. I just want to point out two things. One is that we are discussing it for a acquisitions, maybe because of the nature of goodwill. But the idea, the concept expands to any other decision to allocate resources, the resources within an entity. So I feel it's kind of dangerous to, if we go in that with that path, tomorrow we might be requested to provide analysis which would be the results had you not decided to construct this plant, which would become very complicated to comply with. But that's just a concern about what might happen in the future based on the concept of this specific issue, which is not very different from other situations. And I remember that in another previous meeting, we have been presented with these proposals, and the current proposals don't seem to be very different from the ones we have been presented before. And there was a major disagreement from the side of the preparers concerning the previous proposals. And I noticed that this disagreement continues to exist. But, just pointing it out because I think it's worth noting that we have constantly disagreed with this, the way these proposals have been presented.
Yeah, but I think there is an investor need to understand if the company has done a big investment, a big capital investment, is it successful, yes or no? And as I said, when I worked in practice, when I participated 15-year in conference calls, and after acquisition, there was not any conference call. The analysts have not asked about how the acquisition is doing. Is it doing well or not? And can you please elaborate on that? So there is a kind of interest. And we could not ignore if there is an interest in understanding, okay, is it a good acquisition done? And it's especially, I think, there are some companies who are the whole business model is doing acquisitions, building their business. And to understand if they have a good track record, yes or no, I think it's something which, if I would be investing in this company, I would know. I would understand and getting better information. Is this company good in doing acquisitions and integrating, or is it bad? Because if that is kind of their business, I think it is need to understand for people.
But I think...
First.
Sorry, go on.
I think actually, when I look on the four things you have listed up, the first one where you talk about a qualitative description of the strategic rationale and so on and so forth, that was not so much under dispute, right? Mm-hmm. I think there was more kind of an overall consensus that this is something which is anyway provided in one way or the other in the press release when you do the acquisition.
Late for?
So I don't think that... I think that is an area where further kind of investigation can be done, how you're going forward with that. I think where it becomes a bit difficult when you try to go into all the kind of quantitative assessments which you will ask, where it also becomes actually later on from an audit perspective very difficult to how do you want to validate these amounts. So I think the qualitative route, and maybe to require a follow-up around these qualitative statements made before, I think that is a route which I think is something which could be really thought through further.
But what is that? Man, it is a kind of, we want to be the primary supplier of good X, and that is then could be people track and reporting on that. Is that kind of information which is necessary? I don't know. And I think the debate is also not, I think, about the... At the point of acquisition, I think every company explains also with quantitative number, as Ian said, okay, that in your 18 acquisitions, it was all with synergies, revenue synergies, to make the kind of... People are not, I think, hesitate to disclose this information and have this information. But the problem, my understanding, is to track that 1 year after, 2 years, and is there really kind of information value in it? If you have integrated business, is it possible? Is it not possible? And what is the information value in that? I think that is my, from the discussion, the difficulty. It is not at the point of the acquisition, okay, the rationale for the acquisition. That is not the main difficulty, at least my understanding. Ian?
I think I agree with a lot of what you've said and what Gary says. I think basically what we're doing now doesn't work as a profession. It doesn't give the investors, analysts, what they need, and forget them. There's a governance issue for the shareholders. The owners of the company, is management burning their money on empire building or whatever? Difficult to tell, and it's an entirely legitimate interest. And what we are delivering as a profession now is simply not good enough, and they don't use it. And the proof for me is always when an analyst or anybody takes a number in a financial statement, just puts a red line through it, this is a message for me. And I do that when I help our M&A team. I get somebody else's 10K, goodwill, don't care. Therefore, I think we need to divorce ourselves from the discussion about the bookings that we do under IFRS 3 and think more holistically about what actually people need. And once we start doing that, it opens up an entirely different debate because it's different from what collectively we've been doing for the last 40 years. And therefore, we shouldn't be discouraged that there's a lot of different views because we're just the first bunch of people to be having that. And as soon as you open it up, you'll get a whole load more. The reality is M&A deals are situational. They're done for a multiple number of different reasons, and I never saw one where it was stupid that what was being done. There's something you could think, okay, there's a bit of an optimistic assumption in there, but there's always a good reason. And I think, to come back to your point, Peter, I think you could, for any particular M&A deal, you could identify sort of two or three critical success factors about what you're hoping to achieve. And you could think, okay, how are you going to measure achievement of that? Now, for example, with ours, we could measure revenues. Other people might not be able to do that. That's where I'm a bit cautious about some of the stuff you're saying, okay, the list must be this and this and that. I think as soon as you start saying everybody must do revenues or everybody must do operating profit or whatever, there I think it's a bit of a dangerous game. I think and I don't think we've got the answer to this right away, but I think there should be a more holistic view about what actually are you trying to achieve. And then you should be accountable for that. And it's exactly right. And our internal management are not stupid. Of course we check that. Of course we do. But it's nothing to do with the debits or credits for goodwill and intangible assets. That's a pure compliance exercise. It's simply the stuff we put in. Sorry, it's not. That's where we are. So we need to sort of rethink it. And you know, I think all the preparers in the room, we're happy to work with the ISB on this to get something better. But if we keep hammering the dead horse of goodwill, we'll just have these continued non-productive discussions.
Mm. I think I was encouraged by Gary's indication of flexibility on how we can assess the value of an acquisition over time, because different business situations may result in a different way of looking at it. So that was really encouraging.
Just remind me, I'm one of 14 votes.
just CYA over here.
I think as long as there's 14 options, then that probably works as well.
No, I think I'm thinking of a principles-based approach, information showing the incremental contribution to revenue results and cash flow or something. And we have an itemized list of things that might achieve it. I think
that's fantastic. Sorry, I was joking about the 14, just because you mentioned that.
No,
but so I think that's great. What I was a little bit concerned about is the sense that actually we might do that in addition to what we've already got, and what we all agree is broken. And I think that preparers would be much more willing to invest in the resources required to have some mechanism of tracking, however that fits in with the business model, if you are actually giving us relief in some of the areas that we currently have to invest money and we see very little return. So the annual impairment test, which we don't think is effective, and the arbitrary calculation of intangible assets on acquisition and the resulting unwinding and the complexities around it, the unwinding of all of those.
Okay, thanks, Stephen. Richard?
I also was very encouraged by Gary's comments. It's clear to me that all companies will track their acquisitions somehow for governance purposes to the board, but the way that they track it depends very much on whether it's integrated or not integrated. And if you're going to try and prescribe the kind of disclosure, you have to give a lot of flexibility in the type of disclosure that people can follow to achieve that goal. I also like the idea of reintroducing amortization.
Let's not discuss that.
It's not today.
Can I just comment on the point about flexibility, which I think is quite important, because I think the way we saw it was not so much a sort of pick your own option and do what you want. It was actually decide up front how you're going to assess whether this was a success or not. And then once you've picked your way of measuring it, that you would then be applying it. So it's not like it's a kind of free choice as you go along. It's intended to be kind of through the eyes of management approach, which says, actually, how would you want to assess it internally and then apply that?
Well, sometimes you might do an acquisition that you're intending to run alone, a standalone. Then you do another acquisition, and then you decide to integrate them. So I don't think you can always make your choice up front and then stick with it. It does change.
But you could layer it with an explanation of why you've changed if you do change.
I think the other concern for tracking is how long you want to track. Like all the M&A teams, they keep moving from one project to another, and you are left with running the project. And in my industry, normally the length of the business or the length of the concession, what we call, is around 30 years on an average. So generally, the success can come any part of these 30 years, over a period of 30 years. So in the last 10 years, we have done at least 50 acquisitions with 30 years of horizon of all those entities. And once you acquire and integrate, the particular target company will lose its form and shape when it gets integrated with the overall business. And it's difficult to track the actual versus what you expected at the time of acquisition. So I feel this entire tracking exercise may not be as fruitful as what you are expecting.
And I think what we had in the paper, we said, okay, it depends. I think we had also a kind of CMAQ discussion last week. It is not longer than maybe 1 or 2, 3 years. It depends on the acquisition. But it depends also, man, if you're taking your examples, if you want to use it maybe only in 10 years, maybe you have to track 10 years. But in most, I think it is not, I don't know, we have to discuss it finally, but I think clearly not forever.
Yeah.
Not whole life. Sandra?
A question for you all. Would your view change, or your request for incremental information changed based on how much intangible or goodwill versus the total cost of the acquisition? So, if you had two companies that both had a $45 billion acquisition, 98% of the value got allocated to PP&E and other identifiable assets and liabilities. The other one ended up with $20 million in goodwill. Would your view on the types of information that would be needed to assess the success of the acquisition differ in those circumstances? Are you really trying to assess whether there was goodwill or the intangibles were valid, or are you trying to assess something broader?
Our idea is not just focusing on the information on goodwill. It's much more broader. It's about the performance of the business combination itself.
So I think it's a clear answer, because if you allowing companies to bring something on the balance sheet, which is called goodwill, and you don't have maybe confidence that it tests, which would check, okay, is it really impaired or not, is not probably working, we have some concerns, because also what we have heard from people, investors not looking at details, but do maybe kind of quantitative analysis, book equity divided by other things, and then based make an investment decision based on this quantitative numbers. And if you have allowing as a standard setter to put something as an asset on the balance sheet, which has an impact on equity and investors making decision, but we are not sure if the impairment test is working, we have not a very good feeling about that. Separate from that is clearly that we see, okay, that is a need from investors. If a company has done an acquisition, is that acquisition successful, yes or no? So it is not only one, I think.
I think Martin's right, there's a reputational concern there around goodwill, but actually, you've spent the same money. I'm not really, the allocation doesn't really concern me, particularly in a world where we probably have more unrecognized and tangible assets out there than we did 10, 15 years ago, which in theory tells you there'll be more goodwill, other things being equal.
Look at how is the business valuations working now versus how they used to, and is that tight enough?
It's the cash that, or the capital that you've deployed that interests me and the return you're going to get on it.
Who's next? Christoph?
Yeah, I think possibly the answer lies in choosing some of the parameters the management itself is measuring. I think if we can align what the management, how the management is measuring with what we are disclosing, I think that is a practical way of solving the problem. Now, in this solution, what can be done is that, as you were saying, that something has got to be done. Mm. What can be done is that the management must have set a target at some level or the other, either at a segment level or at a sub-segment level. For example, a percentage increase in revenue, percentage increase in segment profit. So if we allow the management to choose the level and the quality of information it is going to actually measure and disclose that, I think that possibly is one answer.
Maybe. Christoph?
Maybe only a bit of expectation management, because it was said earlier that we track acquisitions in some way or have an idea what measures we use to track. To give you one example, if you do an acquisition and at the outset think that everything else unchanged, we think that we can increase revenue by 10% in a certain area. Now, after a year, it's not 10%, but 11%. At the same time, the economy has changed, competition has changed, customer behavior has changed. If now there is an expectation, I can slice and dice that 1% exceedance into, from this 1%, X percent is because the acquisition behaved better than expected, while Y percent is economic changes, and this is what competition makes up, and this is what customer behavior makes up. Well, with a set of dice, I can roll numbers, but whatever I want to do otherwise is not far away from rolling dice, because these things are so interrelated that I couldn't go and say, now I give you a number for the contribution of the acquisition toward that change in that revenue number. So I could say that the revenue number changed 11% compared to 9%, but to now provide detail how much of that is thanks to the acquisition is something that I think
investors accept that's the reality.
Yeah,
but you can't cut and dice it finally. I don't think they would look for that at all.
They've got to earn their money somehow.
And so, if we would have expected that you could do that, then we would have followed the headroom approach any further.
You went down that road for
yeah, but we stopped.
A surprisingly yeah. long time.
Okay.
What is your question? Yeah. I don't know. Compared to what is now being discussed, the headroom approach seems to be better.
It was a clear statement. What is it?
Based on a few of all the preparers here.
Based on the question that Sandra has made, what would differentiate this need for disclosure? If you buy a company and there's no goodwill, what's the difference between that and buying a major asset?
Nothing.
So this issue, it's broader than just the IFRS 3. I mean, we're focused on something, and someone mentioned and the importance of broadening this discussion.
When we had done the post-implementation review, there was two major outcomes, which I think. One is, okay, investors don't have sufficient information, is an acquisition successful, yes or no, independent of goodwill. Second was, okay, the goodwill impairment test is not working very well, so impairments are too late and too little, maybe. And we're trying to solve that. With the impairment test, I think we tried the headroom approach, which we stopped now. Maybe we think something different, but with the is an acquisition successful, we looking for the way of disclosure, needing your help. What is the appropriate disclosure to give the investors this kind of information? That is our approach overall, what we try to find a solution.
The first preference is qualitative disclosure. The second, first preference is qualitative disclosure.
Yeah.
Second preference is, if at all something has got to be numerical, then give the give the liberty to the entity to choose that what is it that they are going to measure, and then let the actuals be measured against that only.
Just wanted to maybe just chime in here with a couple of comments. I'm very, very sympathetic to what apologies if I say it wrong, but Murillo is saying, you know, if you spend $6 billion on CapEx or you spend $6 billion on a business combination, you know, you spent $6 billion. why should one get more scrutiny than the other? Another comment that was made earlier in talking about synergies, if you're to quantitatively disclose them, I see that as being a bit of an audit challenge, which may or may not be a lot of fun. And apologies again on the pronunciation of the name. So just say the gentleman from DP World, you know, he's talking about commercial sensitivity or competitive sensitivity. That is something that we would very, very much be concerned about in terms of giving up the ingredients, the secret sauce, if you would. And also thinking about a comment that Gary made, and that is in North America, and I don't know if it's a concept that's elsewhere, but we think about business acquisition reports. If you have a business combination in excess of a certain amount relative to your balance sheet and your P&L, then you have to file a business acquisition report. And maybe that might be a way of setting a hurdle. If you have to file a business acquisition report, maybe that's what gets you in this disclosure box. Or maybe just take those business acquisition report hurdles and put them into the standard in terms of making people go into that box. And finally, I would echo the comment, you know, there's going to be a cost to doing that. And, you know, and you might end up with management doing activities or monitoring things in a way they may not otherwise have done, just simply for compliance purposes.
Okay. Thanks, Trent. So I think we should finish with this.
Yes.
We are 10 minutes ahead, so I would recommend, and some people will, I think, want to leave earlier. Could we then be back at 4:05 and then have the last sessions that we're gaining some time? Is that fine?
Okay.